All right, hello everyone, welcome. Right to start our time here. My name is Urs Kastra, I'm the Executive Director of the Brücken Center, and I have the great pleasure actually to introduce our speakers to you, Axel Hornbach and Nico van Eyck, both of the University of Amsterdam, more precisely of the Institute for Information Law at the University of Amsterdam. This is one of the leading information law centers in Europe, and I couldn't be more delighted to welcome Nico here and Axel as well. They will present a fascinating paper on the HTTPS market failure, as well as a at least potentially not so convincing regulatory response to that market failure. I'm very much looking forward to the presentation. Greatly enjoyed reading your paper, and I would encourage you to download the paper and read it. It's fascinating, not only actually the story itself that you're telling, but I like the paper very much in terms of the type of analysis you present. Obviously, dealing with a very hard problem to start with, and you managed well, in my view, to make it accessible also for a broader audience and translate the complex ecosystem in a way that you know, one can structure a conversation around it, but then also the normative analysis and the design and governance questions you outlined are very inspiring and have certainly shaped my thinking on this very hard issue. So with that, thanks for being here. I know, Axel, you will have to run and catch a flight. So I think you're going first. I'll leave it in your hands.
Yeah. I'll kick off because Axel has to go because of personal reasons. I'll be very, very short, and if necessary, afterwards I can further expand on it. I teach telecommunications law, and the Telecommunications Act, there's a chapter about electronic signatures. For 10 years I've been telling my students, you can forget about that chapter because it has no relevance at all. And then suddenly, somewhere in the middle of the night, I got confronted with this Dutch case, DG Notar, and the case is so interesting because it has all these interesting elements that show that there's a value chain involved where everything can go wrong and where there are tremendous challenges. As you all know, we are going to talk about, is the EU regulatory framework sufficient enough for to deal with vulnerabilities of HTTPS? And for those who have to leave in 2 minutes, these are the conclusions. So yes, there is something wrong. The regulation that is being proposed on the European level is not a solution to the problem. Very brief on HTTPS, then I will be even trying to be briefer on, that's not going to happen, I can't promise that, on the DG Notar case, and then Axel will step in and we'll deal with the other three topics on the sheet. I think we're all aware, you all know what HTTPS is, and the S stands for secure. Yes, nobody has questions about HTTPS, then I can skip this slide more or less. Besides that, this shows a little bit the value chain of the whole HTTPS situation. You have a website that is supposed to be secure. It might be secure because it has a certificate that then is checked by the web browser and also gives comfort to the end user. There are all kinds of relationships involved that we elaborate on in the paper, but this is actually the most important picture in the whole presentation. You know who this is? This is the Dutch Minister of the Interior. He started the paper because somewhere at 11 in the evening on all Dutch television screens there was this banner saying extra news bulletin at 1 o'clock in the evening. So was there a major disaster, a terrorist attack, whatever? No. At 1 o'clock this guy, a minister, was sitting behind a desk and telling us that the internet was in danger, but that they had taken precautionary measures and that we could all go to bed again. totally unique. Just imagine that a Secretary of State would be talking about the internet at 1 in the morning at a special news bulletin. It was about IGNOTAR. IGNOTAR is a company that hands out these certificates, not only the internet certificates, but also certificates, qualified certificates that are being used for governmental agencies. And in principle, this company was responsible for about 90% of all the certificates being used in the Netherlands, secured certificates, and also for, to a very large extent, as far as internet certificates are concerned. Iranian hackers had broken into the system. In principle, they had a separation between DigiID is one of the examples of governmental certificates that are being used. Every individual in the Netherlands has a DigiID that allows him to communicate with the tax office or with his municipality for getting a passport, for example. And next to that, they had the internet certificates. Both were in separate systems. But the only problem was those systems, although having a Chinese wall, were connected to the same Microsoft Exchange software, allowing, with a very simple password, to enter in both systems. So, not a very smart thing to do, and within days after the announcement of the ministry, these kind of press bulletins came out, over 500 rogue certificates issued. There was a forensic report which indicated that you name it, whatever domain name was being hacked into and was therefore being compromised. 300,000 addresses were affected, primarily in Iran. So it was quite clear that it was not without a certain purpose that this hack was being put in, because otherwise, probably also elsewhere in the world, you would have seen significant consequences. There were some other email, some other IP addresses also affected, but primarily in Iran. And all this then boiled down to the fact that because of this hack, it became possible to intercept communication, people typing in google.com and not ending up at Google immediately, but first the traffic was taken over by the man in the middle, and he was then taking over control and could listen into the traffic or could do whatever he would like to do with that traffic. The timeline, very important. The attack started probably in June. It took months before real action was being taken. Even nowadays, there are still certificates being used that are possibly compromised. So there's clearly something rotten in the state of the internet. This is not a small thing. Many incidents. The country actually came to a standstill as far as the use of certificates was concerned. There was no measure in place. These certificates are totally unregulated as far as the normal SSL security linked certificates are concerned. It's a little bit different with the qualified certificates, but I will not deal with that right now. But I'll leave it to Axel to go on and tell us how to fix or not to fix the problem that we found.
How not to fix it. Thank you very much for the wonderful reception here, and for, well, people have been really great here. I should add that this presentation and the Q&A will be recorded, so let's rest assured that it will be available for all time, including, no, every, there's no stupid questions, I'm just joking. I will tell you something about the systemic vulnerabilities of this HTTPS environment, and about the EU proposal does not really tackle these systemic security vulnerabilities. These are described in detail in paragraph 2 and 3 of the paper. These have been known for a very, very long time in the security community. Actually, we've got Steve here in the room. He, together with Steve Schultz, wrote a paper in 2010 outlining most of them already. So this was in 2010, and the DigiNotar case really brought home that these compromises can have pretty dire consequences. Just imagine living in Iran and having your communications intercepted. It's not really a fun thing to do. So I will just name a few of these. The most important, the most prominent security flaw in the system is that any CA, so any certificate authority, can vouch for any domain name. That means that if you have a domain, whatever the domain, maybe google.com, somebody else can go to any other certificate authority and request a certificate for the same domain name. This results quite directly in the fact that any CA is a single point of failure in this system. So if any one CA gets compromised, like Dieter Noether did, practically there's no single domain name safe from a man-in-the-middle attack. So who are these CAs? Well, Electronic Frontier Foundation has a great project on that. It's called the SSL Observatory. And that's actually the only data we have on this CA ecosystem. They find that there are about 650 certificate authorities spread across 54 jurisdictions. And what is even more interesting is that 50 plus of them are government owned. So think about Chinese government, US government, Dutch government, the government in Iran probably also has one. And if you look at this ecosystem, you can see very little dots. These are all the CAs. And here in the corner is Digi Notar, interconnected with some other CAs, which brings us to the next, or to another systemic vulnerability, which is that if one of these certificate authorities gets a root certificate authority status with browsers, that means that the browser will trust this certificate authority by default. So there's no forward security. You might even argue there's no backward security because how does this go? There is an audit, and then you comply to the root certificate authority policy of the browser, and then for the rest of eternity, the browser will trust you and establish a secure connection, even though you got hacked. If we look further into the problem, we see that many of these root certificate authorities sublet or sell their root certificate authority status to other certificate authorities. So think of a chain of trust. If a chain of trust of 10 certificate authorities only contains one root certificate authority, that means that the connection will be trusted by default. So what many certificate authorities practically do is they have their luxury brand, we are a root certificate authority, buy a certificate with us for $1,000, and then they will have subsidiaries selling certificate certificates for a much lesser price. Which brings us to the next problem. Okay, what happens if a certificate authority gets hacked? Well, then trust revocation should come in for either certificate or the entire authority. But there the browser faces a tremendous difficult choice. For example, in the case of Komodo, which owns roughly, well, nobody knows how much, but roughly, let's say 20 to 25% of the certificate market. Well, think of a browser revocating trust in that certificate authority. That would render from 1 second to the other a quarter of the web or the quarter of the HTTPS encrypted web inaccessible. So browsers faces tremendous difficult choice, a trade-off between connectivity and security. Well, end users, of course, their interest is they just want to go to the website, right? And another thing that the Komodo case illustrates is that scale is actually a risk vector. So the larger CA is, the more difficult, the more impact a compromise has, but the more difficult it is to revocate trust. And then a problem is, of course, as we saw in the Digi Notar case, Digi Notar, there were about 90 days between the initial compromise and Digi Notar actually contacting authorities saying, hey, wait a minute, our systems got hacked. And probably they had been in the know for more than 1.5 months. So for 1.5 months, users across the internet had perceived trust of a good connection, and browsers had perceived trust of a good connection, while the communications were actually compromised. Well, this is a very big problem. I mean, it's one thing that you know that your communications are being hacked, but it's a way other thing that you have perceived trust in a connection. I mean, then let's take the case of an Iranian dissident trusting a connection, that can have really dire consequences. If we look at websites, websites are the entities that initiate this HTTPS encryption, right? They buy HTTPS certificate and they decide what kind of certificate, how much security it will have. And if we look at, there's not really a lot of data out there, but this SSL Pulse project, which can be accessed for just if you Google this, it actually monitors around roughly 200,000 popular domain names and finds that only 14.2% of them implement HTTPS poorly. So it's one thing that a certificate authority sells a proper certificate. It's another thing that the website actually acquiring the certificate doesn't update their servers, don't patch their systems, etc. So this SSL Pulse project illustrates that, well, whether it's 10 or 20 or 30%, a very large part of websites acquiring HTTPS certificates don't implement it properly.
Is that for third-party certificates, or does that include self-signed certificates?
It does not. I believe it does not include self-signed.
Yeah, SSL Pulse doesn't include.
No.
Yeah.
So what this illustrates, the bigger picture, is that every stakeholder is part of the problem. Websites need to buy a certificate to start this whole chain, but they need to implement it properly. Certificate authorities, of course, need to have good security practices and notify whenever something goes wrong. Web browsers are sort of the central mediator of this whole thing. On the one hand, with the end user, they are the ones who decide which certificate authority has root status, etc. So every stakeholder is a part of the problem. And that's why we employed in the paper a value chain approach. And value is broadly defined not only in economic terms but also in underlying normative values. So in the paper we look at what's the role and responsibility of a stakeholder in this whole chain of authentication for HTTPS, and what interactions do impact HTTPS. This is a work in progress, but what we have done as a first step is look at a very recent EU proposal. It was launched by the European Commission in June 2012. In the aftermath of DigiNotar, and ESA, the European Network and Information Security Agency, published a very short but quite good analysis of what seemed to be the problem. And there was one sentence that took everybody's attention. They analyzed DigiNotar and had some remarks about Komodo. And in the report is the sentence that certificate authorities are too big to fail, especially in the case of Komodo, like rendering the quarter of the web inaccessible. That's just like big banks. It's they cannot fall down. So what has the European Commission decided upon? Okay, let's target the certificate authorities. And let's regulate, basically. The e-signatures regulation of June 2012 is a regulation. It's not a directive. What this means is that as soon as it is adopted by the European Parliament and the European Council of Ministers, it has direct binding force in 27 member states in the largest economic trading zone in the world. And so the question is whether there's a paradigm shift in the making. As Nico already told us, it's an unregulated environment. And as we will see, it's possibly very strictly regulated after adoption. So the proposal has all sorts of provisions. It has provisions on liability, security requirements. It has, for the first time, security breach notification. All sorts of detailed provisions on supervision. Today we can only discuss three of the most prominent issues, but everything is in the paper. We will discuss the underlying values of the proposal, its scope, and one very concrete issue is the one of liability. So if we start with the underlying values, so what does the European Commission or the European legislature for that part see as the very underlying, the most important value of regulating this HTTPS environment? And we actually only came across economic incentives or economic arguments. So we need to facilitate the digital economy. It's very important that users have trust so that they engage in online transactions. But other interests, which one might argue are equally important, go unmentioned, such as the reliability of communications, the confidentiality of communications, the integrity of communications. And the proposal doesn't even mention constitutional values, such as communications freedom or privacy or freedom of expression, even though it should do that. It is obliged to do that based on the EU Charter of Fundamental Rights. And this has some real consequences. So I think you might think that, you know, okay, this is an abstract thing, not explicitating underlying values. But the real consequences it has is that the EU, the e-signatures regulation contains a lot of delegated acts. So the European Commission has said, well, it's too complicated to formulate detailed provisions on that specific subset of problems right now, but in a later stadium, a national regulatory authority or the European Commission might formulate delegated acts. Well, think about 2 years from now, and a European Commission only getting ready to come up with a delegated act and looking at the EU regulation and only seeing economic interests. So in these specific circumstances, it will not evaluate proposals accordingly with the other interests. We will come back to that later. Then an important issue is the issue of scope. We already saw that the systemic security vulnerabilities of HTTPS, every stakeholder has its part in the problem. But this proposal only targets certificate authorities. So it targets trust service providers and explicitly mentions certificate authorities issuing SSL certificates. Other critical stakeholders of the environment remain unregulated. In the explanatory memorandum, it hints at websites, at e-commerce websites that may should have an obligation to acquire certificates to secure communications, but in this point of time, it's too complicated, and we leave it to the market to decide. Whatever one may think of that argument, the argument that actually is in the proposal is that, well, at this moment, the European Union hasn't really secured its own website, so that's not good. And it's actually in the text. It's on page 35 and 87 of the impact assessment, which is an exceptionally poor argument. You would probably agree with me. This has some real consequences, as we will see, because it presents a disproportionate burden on a particular subset of the HTTPS market value chain. These both issues are become really clear when we look at liability. So in Article 9 of the proposal, for the first time, there's a strict liability, or there's a liability regime introduced. So certificate authorities will become liable for any direct damage due to the failure to comply with Article 15 unless negligence. So Article 15 is an open security norm. It states that certificate authorities should comply with the state of the art of security requirements, but we don't know what the state of the art is. This will be formulated later in a delegated act. Which is very surprising, is that this policy choice for liability regime is hardly motivated. It's just there. Again, we see that other stakeholders go unmentioned. Websites who may have a responsibility when they acquire cheap or less secure certificates or poorly implement HTTPS, they go unmentioned. They don't. They're not mentioned in relation to the liability regime. Untimely patching by browsers or software vendors is not mentioned. It's only the CAs. Now, this will have some real consequences. Of course, liability may help to incentivize the bad actors among the CAs. They may have may start thinking about better security practices. And as they have the burden of proof of proving whether they have acted negligent or not, they will probably invest in proper logging. DigiNotar didn't do that, by the way, so that's probably why it's in there. But in Article 9 is a very open formulation of the damage. So apart from the fact that not all the stakeholders are within the text, we also see that any direct damage is a very broad formulation. So that what does that mean? Does it mean that a single company will be liable for the entire HTTPS system? We already saw what certificates in the case of DigiNotar are compromised. I mean, it's a Google, it's a Skype, it's a Facebook, even a CIA, even a Mossad certificate. Will a company like DigiNotar, with a yearly turnover of a couple of million dollars, become liable for this entire ecosystem? How does that work? One could theorize about small certificate authorities and their relation to and relation to big certificate authorities. So small, this will probably be favorable to incumbents. As they will be more susceptible to pay high insurance fees, or more they will be able to pay for good lawyers to defend them. But one could also think that this liability regime would render sort of the business practice of being a CA too risky. I mean, think about when you're hacked and you become liable for all the damage that results from that hack. I mean, I would think twice of becoming a CA in the first place if this comes true. Sure.
In terms of the size of the industry and the degree to which that favors the incumbent, couldn't you make the exact opposite argument, that large incumbents are much more at risk, whereas a very small subsidiary certificate authority could just do business, and if they ever get sued, if they ever get hacked, they go bankrupt?
Okay. That's exactly what happened.
It works two ways.
Yeah. It works two ways. And DigiNotar actually got bankrupt. Then you go bankrupt. I mean, that's not a very happy thing for a company to face. But okay, good point. The big CAs. If you look at their policy, well, that's also very a jungle out there. But they insure themselves for this liability. So I guess they pay quite high insurance fees to insure themselves against these sort of damages. And as soon as you become liable for all the damage, I guess small. If I want to start a certificate authority tomorrow, that would it raises the barrier to entry that market, I would say.
Well, doesn't that also raise the cost of certificates so that less people will use them and you'll have a smaller organizations just won't bother, so you'll have a larger percentage of the internet that just avoids the whole issue?
Yeah, well, that would be my first. I think I would agree with that. Yes. So, from the analysis of this EU proposal, we reflected in the paper on some broader findings. We've seen that this global socio-technical system is really hard to regulate. The systemic vulnerabilities of HTTPS are very real and require robust technical and policy solutions. Now, Moxie Martin, Spike, and Google have been discussing in the CA community some proposals that will probably go a long way of addressing the most prominent security vulnerability, namely that any CA can sign for any domain name. But even if that got adopted, very critical vulnerabilities remain.
Do you think governments are against the use and large security authorities are against the use of DAIN? Because that allows the domain owner to define which CA, and they could create their own.
Well, I know for a fact that governments across at least the Western world are very supportive of synthesizing the DNS problem and the CA problem in DNSSEC. But I guess that presents. I'm not really confident if that is a good solution, because you would instead of being very dependent on certificate authorities, you would be dependent on registrars, domain name registrars, and I think you would face similar problems. So I'm more confident of websites actually having the responsibility and the possibility of saying, okay, this is my certificate, and that certificate authority signed it, and that's the one you have to accept, instead of having a plethora of certificates out there. This is one of the final sheets. The question, so the broader findings, even if these got adopted, systemic vulnerabilities remain. And if you want to regulate, looking at the EU proposal, some of the lessons are that you have to make the full set of underlying values explicit, which is, of course, private interest and e-commerce, but also includes constitutional values and a real understanding of what information security actually means. It's not only about availability of communications, it's also about its integrity and confidentiality. What is very important also is to provide a solid legal basis for the exercise of executive power. As we saw in the DigiNotar mitigation, from one moment to the other, the Dutch government took over a certificate authority. Imagine a government taking over a private company and then negotiating with Microsoft the delay of the patches to its browsers for more than 2 weeks. So actually maintaining an insecure ecosystem. There was no legal basis for that. And it's highly questionable, the exercise in itself. It will be very important if you want to address these problems of HTTPS to adopt a value chain approach. So identify all the stakeholders that are involved, look at their interactions, and not solely target a single player in that ecosystem. And for your analysis, if an ecosystem in itself will be able to if the market incentives lead to desired outcomes, the recent field of security economics might help in one way. Okay, some future work for my PhD project and our paper were, of course, to publish this. We will do some case studies and look at sort of the legal conceptualization of cybersecurity and information security, because we think that many people are tossing in a lot of subjects in there. And a clear understanding of what the legal concept of cybersecurity or information security actually is, that would help a lot. Thank you very much for your time. I'm very afraid that I have to go. The URL for the paper is down there. I hope the sheets will get online so you can find it. It's on SSRM as well. I really have to go. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Axel. And I believe we're almost close to, if you just punch in certificate authority collapse, it will pop up as the first reference in Google. Axel, have a safe trip.
Thanks.
Questions?
What stops governments from deciding, for example, China can decide they want a certificate authority? Is anyone in a position to stop them?
There is none.
So Iran, instead of hacking the certificate authority in the Netherlands, could just decide that it would be a new root authority, except that they apparently were doing things in a way that they didn't want to be traceable direct, as simply to that.
That's one of the options that we also have been looking into, and that's why we also want to focus on why are governments involved in those 40 cases where governments are the certificate authority. You have a similar problem with domain names, although there's behind domains we don't have this security issue. There are situations where independent companies are involved, there are situations where governments are involved. Is it on purpose or is it just by coincidence? One of the weakest elements always remains that there are so many trust layers involved that it's almost imaginable, besides when there is a totally new conceptualization of this problem, it's almost impossible to find a solution that will offer a very substantial increase of trust. It's an extremely vulnerable system. And if you look at the economic side of it, that's something we also further want to explore. It's actually amazing to see how little money is going around in the CA business in comparison to the risks that are connected to compromising certificates. In our view, this is really one of the ultimate weaknesses of the internet today. And when you said, well, the consequence of having regulation that puts more responsibility on the CAs is probably that less certificates are going to be used, well, that's then an outcome that's even less wanted. Unless people are thinking, well, there is no certificate, so it's unsafe, and we now know that almost everything on the internet is unsafe.
How would these regulations affect commercial CAs outside of Europe? And also non-commercial large CAs within Europe. I'm in particular thinking about the research CAs, the national research CAs that exist throughout Europe that a lot of scientific research systems depend on for a real trust network. Even though it's outside of like the browser-based trust network, it's a well-established scientific CA trust federation.
Yeah. The regulations that now are, well, they still have to be put into place, but this is the proposal. The interesting thing is that it actually poses almost similar rules on SSSL as already are existing for qualified certificates. The existing regulation only deals with qualified certificates, as they call it. These are these famous PKI certificates, for example, that are being used by governments and also by notaries, for example. And it was not thought through when they made this draft because it makes no distinction between certificates in a non-commercial environment and certificates in a commercial environment. And at the same time, one of the big loopholes is the fact that it only addresses European certificate authorities and not certificate authorities outside Europe. So it actually incentivizes the use of certificates from outside Europe instead of improving trust and reliability within Europe.
Yeah. So from the structure of the system, it seems like no national or geographic-based regulation can solve the problem, right? Any CA anywhere in the world can vouch for any domain name anywhere in the world. Given that, isn't the only possible solution going to be a technological one?
That's what we think is at the end the only solution, and in between you can take certain steps like limiting this freedom of 651 or 600 whatever certificate authorities. You could think of a system where you audit the certificate authorities, but other thing is one of the complexities of this whole example, because this company was not involved only in the SSSL business, but also in the business of these qualified certificates. And in the system of qualified certificates, there is already an obligation for auditing. But auditing failed completely. First of all, because the auditing was a traditional auditing, the company made statements and the auditor only said, well, this is what the company said. So there was no forensic auditing of the company. And it will not help in the case of badly organized CAs. Because it's like with security breaches. It's very nice that we oblige companies to report security breaches. But there's the idea behind that concept that all these companies are trustworthy companies. DigiNotar was supposed to be, I mean, this company was originally created by the Dutch notaries. It didn't report the security breach. It let it happen. It was only because a German organization informed a Dutch organization that deals with cybercrime about possible breaches. Otherwise, maybe nothing would have happened. And that's also what we know from a lot of other cases that have been documented, that there was no information given when the breach took place. Often, these were very small breaches, so probably the risks were not that big. This case totally went out of hand because it was too big. But there was really, really nothing put in place. And like Axel told you, there is, and the timeline also shows, we still are suffering with problems. Let me give you one anecdote. This company also had these PKIs. These PKIs are regulated. That's where the Dutch telco regulator could step in, and they revoked the license that was given to this DigiNotar company. They, however, allowed DigiNotar certificates to be used for 2 weeks. No motivation why. This decision was challenged in court because certain parties found that 14 days was too short. You know which organization did that? The Dutch Federation of Notaries. So if the solution is we use a trusted third party, then you're actually putting the problem somewhere else and where it probably might repeat itself. So it's a really, I mean, I know there is always this problem of who trusts the trustee, but in this case, it didn't work. And I'm afraid that in most of these similar cases, you will have similar vulnerabilities. So we don't have yet a real solution to the problem. And that's why we try to work with this value chain approach, because solutions like we put all the liability on one party will never work, will never. For example, another thing which was very prominent in this case was the company didn't do logging. There were no logs, so it was not even possible to make a fair estimate of the damage. And we know why it happened, because, well, it was never a very profitable company. Again, I think there is not much money to be made in this sector. Half a year before, it was bought by Vesco, a larger US company involved in similar kind of activities. So what normally happens is you stop all the operations, there is no investment being made anymore, no updating takes place anymore. And then these things happen. And there was no security put into place. There was a bunch of regulation, incredible regulation, that says that you need to have this auditing obligation, you need to have state-of-the-art technology, you need to have a security officer especially assigned to these kind of things. But that's just regulation. It doesn't mean that companies comply with that regulation. It's too much regulation. Again, I think there is no business in CAs if we are going to increase liability. Liability was also there. Already in this existing European directive, as far as PKIs are concerned, CAs are fully liable for the consequences of mistakes in handing out certificates or false use of certificates. You can't insure that. Of course, you can have insurance, but insurance will be limited. And you can't predict what the damage is because you don't know what your client is doing. That might be let me give you an interesting example here. That might be a pizza delivery company, which is not able to deliver pizzas anymore. That's small damage, but it might also be an electricity company. And it might involve all its communication on its electricity grid. If that then has to be put out of order to check whether or not maybe it was compromised, that costs hundreds of millions. So these are the kind of situations where you have to ask yourself, is this a risk that we want to put in a private structure, or is this a risk that is more like the type of risk that we take as a society? Which is, of course, a very fundamental issue, but it's somewhere hidden in this whole situation.
So what's your recommendation to the European Commission looking at this proposal? It's unrealistic, perhaps, to change it conceptually, but how to avoid the bad things from happening? How would you tweak it to make it more simple?
What we intend to do is we will contact the European Commission, but we're also contacting the European Parliament. And we will first of all explain to them that this will not be the solution, but we also will try to push for a more value chain oriented approach. There is very little to gain by having a regulation at the moment. I think that even without the regulation, the situation would not be much different. It helps a little bit because it creates awareness of the problem, but electronic signatures, it all dates back to 1999, that's when the first regulation was put into place. The whole idea in Europe was, this is going to be a huge market. This is really something where people are going to make money. And now after almost 20 years, after more than 10 years, we clearly see that it was supposed to become much bigger than what it actually became. And yeah, maybe you have to abolish this and you have to deal with these kind of things the similar way you have been dealing with certified processes in other contexts, like transactions in real estate transactions, where you have a different system of checks and balances, which also includes levels of certification. Already the fact that a notary is involved is helpful, but also the fact that you decentralize might be something that is important in this case, because then you can make the risks containable. The fact that you have these single points of failure, that's per definition one of the weakest elements in the whole story. It's better to, for example, have maybe 10 or 20 or 30 or 40 organizations, or to make compartments of certificates so that you can contain the damage, because it's only affecting a limited group of certificates. Another very interesting part of the research will focus on the browsers, because the browsers are totally out of the picture in this whole story, and Axel mentioned already, it's interesting to see that the government negotiated with Microsoft not to update its browser. And the providers of browsers are, I mean, that's a very limited amount of companies that are involved. They definitely should take a higher level of responsibility in these kind of cases. We were not aware of the importance of a browser when it comes to securing the internet. So I'm not going to say Microsoft and Google and Mozilla will be dragged into huge amounts of regulation, but it's quite clear that they have an important role to play. And that was neglected for a long time.
So if I started my own pizza place in the Netherlands tomorrow, what would I do? Would I have to go to purchase another certificate from a different authority? And if I was doing credit card transactions or something, and does your country have PCI compliance? You know about PCI here in the USA?
If we're not talking about financial transactions, yeah. I mean, that's, the financial world is quite well regulated in this respect, better regulated, but yeah. When it comes to the ordinary use of an SSL certificate, we have two companies left who can hand out SSL certificates, but there's no need to buy one in the Netherlands. You can buy it everywhere. It's a free market.
Yeah.
So you go for the lowest price. That's the point that we also make. There's little awareness by websites of the importance of a safe structure.
I mean, I would assume like smaller businesses would just have their hosting company take care of it instead of a little pizza shop trying to worry about it themselves. They just have somebody else worry about it. right? Or is that how you do it? I mean,
That's part of the problem. That's also part of the problem why so often smaller web shops are the victim of hackers, because they use particular software that everybody uses, or they use a particular service provider that is vulnerable. So if you know who is vulnerable, you can automatically go to all these web shops and test the vulnerability of the system. It's if you would see this as something happening to a physical store, then you would ask yourself, why do we have regulation on sprinkler systems, and why do we have regulation on the interior of stores, and why are these store owners aware of the fact that if they turn into a virtual store, that similar issues might be at stake? But you will find that in all kinds of reports that trust and security are not things that are very high on the agenda. It's like with privacy. Companies who are very vulnerable in as far as privacy is concerned are hardly reporting that as a company risk. I sometimes suggest that financial institutions or financial supervisors should step in and should make rules about how companies should report on their vulnerabilities, their risks. You have very, very detailed SEC regulation on how you have to report on your financial risks, and you have no regulation or hardly any regulation how you should report on non-financial risk that can have a tremendous financial impact. To make it very concrete, if for a company like Facebook, privacy is almost a core element of the business model, then they should also report in a very detailed way about the risks. Maybe not in reporting that's accessible to everyone, but there should be much more reporting on that.
You framed the problem partly as, you know, the fact that any certificate authorities aren't necessarily linked to the actual domain name. But the domain name system itself has its own vulnerabilities. But question is, is the EU thinking about regulating domain name system as well? Because, impersonating, a site can happen in many sort of ways.
No, not yet. It's I see this kind of work as something like, this is an example. Maybe there are other situations where we find similar issues. I also don't want to overexpose the problem, but it's a clear problem. And I think it's also part of the initial design of the internet that we find these kind of risks, because it was never built to exclude these kind of risks. And there are also a lot of kind of risks with email, for example. Similar problems.
Code signatures.
Yeah.
And the other part of that is, wouldn't it then, a good design be to tie the certificate authority, to the domain name register?
It's called DAIN. It's an IETF standard as of this summer.
Oh.
I represent a hardware crypto company that the CEO is using, so I'm working on
this. That helps, because, again, that doesn't mean that you then have a different risk level. So that remains one of my problems, that there is a systematic fault in the whole concept of a certificate in this case. Yeah, I see you laughing, Colin, but...
You've just done a great job framing what to me seems
like,
yes. As you said, a narrowly, a real complex thing that you could actually work on.
Yeah.
I think it's...
But, I sometimes tell people that law is the only existing perpetuum mobile. We will never be out of a job. any further questions? Yes?
I'm curious more about the browsers as a stakeholder here, what you see going on with them. Whether or not things like having pop-ups saying, questioning the certificate, or whether it's been self-signed or whether there's mixed content on the page, if that's a step in the right direction, does the, or is that simply throwing off too many false positives where it's confusing users? What does that play out? Yeah. Does that encourage sites to strengthen their security in the way that their site is built, or?
Google, for example, Google has put forward some interesting proposals to increase security and trust. I think they might help. One of the biggest problems is the end user, because it's up to the end user at the end to either accept signaling and when he gets something on the screen to do something with it. We know how it works with privacy clauses and with cookies. If there's too much information, nobody does anything with it.
Autopilot of just
exactly. And the other thing is, it also depends on whether the users update their browser. I mean, the browser manufacturer sends updates, but the updates then have to be put into place, and that's something where also a lot of end user responsibility comes at the table.
One comment to that is Adam from, he's the security person behind Chrome, and I would say Chrome users, you might say, are technically a little more advanced. Chrome recently published a click-through rate on the advisory of SSL certificate warning, and it was 61.6%.
Next.
We see that we have a lot of issues at the moment. It's one of the reasons why, I don't know where we stand here, but I mean, in Europe, privacy by design and privacy by default are becoming more and more popular as possible solutions. Still also questionable, but nevertheless, it's quite clear that consent, as we have known it as a concept for a very long time, is no longer workable if you have to take so many decisions. I somewhere read an article that people only take 7 reasoned decisions on a daily basis.
And there's a problem, too, with offloading the trust decision-making to the end user in terms of pop-ups, because they're not in a position to really make that analysis. And then in the past, too, and even up to today, you know, one thing the browsers could do is trust fewer CAs as root. You know, typically the browsers, all of them have relied on default trust stores that are huge, you know. I mean, not only do they trust a large number of CAs, but then those CAs will have, you know, sub CAs and cross sign CAs that they, I mean, the, and there's been some discussion around, you know, when particularly when Firefox and Mozilla wants to trust a new CA, and there'll be some hubbub around it. But it's really a fair, you know, for the most part, it's, are you breathing and do you have a pulse and proof you're trusted as root CA by the main browsers? They can start there.
I wouldn't mind a shakeout of the sector. It would be very helpful. But then your single point of failure risk is also increasing.
Yeah, and by the way, I think your point on the liability, and I, having written on this in the past, and you know, I've kind of complained about in the context in the US where the state of affairs is, you can disclaim if you're a CA under the accepted practices under Web Trust and CA Browser Form. You can disclaim all responsibility for fault from a CA, from a compromise, and but I think your point is a good one, is that having liability sit, you know, if you visit direct liability on CAs by regulation or what have you, that doesn't really solve anything, because even Komodo, that, you know, certifies 1/4 of the web, you know, they're a little tiny operation in Jersey City, New Jersey. And the fact that they're liable for something doesn't mean anything, you know. And in terms of their insurance limits, you know, a $2 million aggregate liability policy doesn't matter.
So
I think your point's really well taken.
Yeah, the quote from Inisa is, of course, a variation of the famous quote that we had during the banking crisis. I mean, banks had the same problem. I used to advise a bank, and in those days, everybody was talking about securitization. So you have a loan and then you securitize it, but we were also securitizing with the same company. I don't know, one of these larger banks that couldn't fail. So that meant that at the end, society had to step in and had to save that bank.
Just to follow up on Ed's comment, I think that one of the reasons that a lot of browsers have been moving to auto-update, like, you know, it auto-updates every time you restart, is to get rid of some of the problems having to do with users just never updating their browsers and never getting certificate controlled after those security breaches and so on.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.